said, "I am the door. Whoever enters through me will be saved." Other religions might tell you to love others, but that won't get you through the door.
Jesus wasn't a very open-minded individual, was he?
I think he was just telling the truth.
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-523-8669. LifelinePro.com.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. This is Tuesday. Forgive me. We had a long weekend, didn't we? And last night was Monday, so that means tonight is Tuesday, and it would be the 30th? 31st. May 31st, 2005, Tuesday. Thank you for being with us tonight. And I hope you had a lovely holiday weekend, folks. Memorial Day. When I think of Memorial Day, what I remember now is how many Americans, since this country began, have been pulled into wars that have been orchestrated by the elite. And I think of the war ongoing today, the never-ending war in Iraq. I think of the young people who are killing and dying in defense of the world order. In all this time, every war that's ever been fought, they all believed that they were fighting for a cause. They thought, they believe, you'll even hear some of them talk about, and their parents talk about, their sons and daughters being in Iraq fighting for the freedom, for our freedom. And it saddens me. And that's what Memorial Day reminds me of today, folks. And my heart cries for all of those, for all of us who were born into this lie and who never, and had never, in the schools, in the government indoctrination centers, that never really knew the truth, not the truth about recent history, and of course not the truth about ancient history. And we thank Alan Watt for the hours that he spent with us on Sweet Liberty, bringing us out of the dark ages as far as ancient history is concerned. I want to share a spiritual message with you tonight. Here's one. This is a statement from the Course in Miracles. Remember, in the New Testament, Jesus says that the kingdom of God is within you. This is a quote from the text of the Course in Miracles. To be in the kingdom is merely to focus your full attention on it. What do you think that means, folks? To be in the kingdom is merely to focus your full attention on it. What it means to me is that we have never really left our Creator. and that we not only were born into a lie as far as the history has been given us, but maybe into an illusion here in the third dimension. I know that sounds woo-woo way out there, but it is something to consider, isn't it, that the third dimension, the lowest of the frequencies. Is as we see it. Here's one more. Think about this one. My kingdom is not of this world. This is in the text of the Course in Miracles. Because it is in you, and you are of your Father. My kingdom is not of this world, because it is within you, and you are of your Father. All right. Tell you what we're doing tonight. I've had information on the drugs and all the chemicals and et cetera that have been being put into our food, and it's like when I began talking with you about MSM Plus. I wanted to do it for so long and just kept putting it off, and so that's what I'm going to do tonight, is share with you some information I have here. And this one is titled, A Psychiatrist Blows the Lid on Antidepressants. This is by John Rappaport from No More Fake News, May 27th, 2005. For the past year, I've been receiving communications from a practicing American psychiatrist who has an office in the southeastern U.S. He sees patients privately and also works at a large hospital. Increasingly, this man has been expressing doubts about the drugs he has been prescribing. Now he has blown the lid off his own profession, and it appears he's ready to switch careers or become an alternative practitioner. Here's an excerpt from our recent conversation. This is from a psychiatrist, unnamed, folks. So, of course, I cannot guarantee that this is a true conversation. I believe it to be so. Question, why do you doubt the drugs? And I'm not going to say question and answer. You'll be able to know by the tone whether it's the question or the answer, okay? Why do you doubt the drugs? They're toxic and injurious. Which ones? All of them. And in particular? In particular, the antidepressants, Paxil, Prozac, Zoloft, and so on. They're not showing, on balance, good results, and patients have been experiencing adverse effects, such as, I'm hearing noises in the background here, folks, and I, you know, when I called in, it was after the intro had played, and I'm assuming that I am on air, and I think if I wasn't, I'd be getting phone calls, so I'm going to continue here, but I'm hearing some type of a background noise. So he says that the antidepressants, the psychiatrist, Paxil, Prozac, Zoloft, and so on, in particular, are toxic and injurious. They're not showing, on balance, good results, and patients have been experiencing adverse effects, such as sleeplessness, nightmares, erratic behavior, highs and lows, crashes, attempts to commit suicide, exacerbated depression, violence, dramatic personality changes. Why do you think this is happening? To be honest, I don't know. But my sense is, in general, that the drugs interfere in unpredictable ways with various new neurotransmitter systems. I also believe they can work extreme changes in blood sugar levels and electrolyte levels. You know, it's not hard to create these effects with chemicals. The body is not able to integrate them in its normal functioning. I compare it to suddenly setting up all sorts of roadblocks and detours and forced lane changes on a busy highway. You'll get big trouble. Let me just go over those last two answers again so you can hear this. He's talking about the antidepressants, and there's a lot of them, folks, that the side effects that they cause, sleeplessness, nightmares, erratic behavior, highs and lows, crashes, attempts to commit suicide, exacerbated depression, violence, dramatic personality changes. Why do you think this is happening? The psychiatrist said, to be honest, I don't know. But my sense is, in general, that the drugs interfere in unpredictable ways with various neurotransmitter systems. I also believe, and they can work extreme changes in blood sugar levels and electrolyte levels. You know, it's hard to create these effects with chemicals. The body, it's not hard to create these effects with chemicals. The body is not able to integrate them in its normal functioning. I compare it to suddenly setting up all, picture this within the neurological system, folks, in the nervous and the transmitting of the pathways. He said, I would compare it to suddenly setting up all sorts of roadblocks and detours and forced lane changes on a busy highway. You'll get big trouble. Have you tried to communicate your concerns to colleagues and medical groups? For a short time I did, but I was given the cold shoulder. I got the distinct feeling I was being treated like some wayward child who had his facts all wrong. Who do you blame for this drugging catastrophe? At the moment, everybody. The doctors, the drug companies, the FDA, the psychiatric teaching institutions, and the press. And at some point, patients are going to have to take responsibility and not follow the orders of their doctors. I bet you there's not one of us that doesn't have a friend or a loved one who's on these kinds of drugs. Yes, folks? Do you believe that doctors should cut back and give the drugs to some people and not others? Well, that sounds good, but there's no way to know what effects the drugs will cause in any given individual, especially as time passes. Even in the short term, I've seen some frightening things. Do you believe the profession of psychiatry has made some kind of overarching deal with the drug companies? Yes. The drug companies are everywhere. They stick their noses into everyone's business. I want to remind you that Alan was telling us a week or so ago about a drug company that is in cahoots with the food industry. And that's what he was pointing out. What in the world would a drug company have to do with food unless it's being put into the food, folks? Keep this in mind, please. He says they're everywhere. They stick their noses into everyone's business. What lies about the drugs have you had to purge from your own mind? What lies about the drugs have you had to purge from your own mind, asking the psychiatrist? He said the main one is that there is some kind of miracle breakthrough. Another one is that I can rely on the judgments and certifications of the FDA. We're playing Russian roulette out here. It's a very dangerous situation. The individual who sent this mailing out was telling about his own addiction to Valium when he had gone through a particularly, any divorce is damaging, isn't it, to our emotional and physical body. But he said that he worked in a pharmacy and he had a prescription for Valium to help him keep his head together, and he said that as time went on he needed more and more and more of it to be able to actually feel any effect of it. But he said he didn't worry about that because there was a big bottle of Valium right there at the pharmacy. And then finally he realized, and I don't recall how or what, but he said he knew he had to get off them and he cold turkeyed them. And I understand that that's very dangerous to do too. But even the Valium is something that is so common today, and people think it's harmless. And what brought this to mind that I wanted to share with you is that he said, and so you can be on the lookout for this, that what he understands is today that they have a new drug that replaces Valium, and it isn't habit forming. Well, don't believe it. Don't believe it, folks. So The next question he asked the psychiatrist, do you believe that some of the school shootings have resulted from children being on the antidepressants? I didn't until one day a 16 year, well, I want to first, before I get into that, because I don't want to interrupt this flow, I want this question that was asked, do you believe that some of the school shootings have resulted from children being on the antidepressants? Well, according to the CCHR, Citizens Commission on Human Rights, and I know it is connected with Scientology, and I also know that they have done some just outrageously important work in bringing to light the psychiatric industry. But anyway, yeah, you don't need a psychiatrist, just get brainwashed at your local Scientology church. But anyway, they have done some great work, and they, according to their reports, and they actually do cite their documentation. There isn't one school shooting that has taken place that the child who was responsible for it was on these psychotropic drugs. Kip Kinkle, was that his name? The boy in Oregon, I believe it was, who shot his mom and dad and then went to school, and he was on Prozac. And he had been on Prozac. And you see, the thing is, he was 15 years old. I don't ever remember reading or hearing what happened to Kip Kinkle. He did say he heard voices, too, and the voices came from the bushes in front of his home. And who's to say that the boy wasn't a target, that along with the psychotropics that he was, that were into his system, that they were, that there actually had been planted some type of a device that would sound like it's a voice, and it was somebody's voice coming from the bushes, and they told him to do what he did, and he did it, and he was 15 years old. He will be tried as an adult. He would be tried for those murders as an adult, and yet as a child he didn't have a choice as to whether or not he, quote, wanted to take these drugs. This is the insanity of the system that we are living in today. So the question, do you believe that some of the school shootings have resulted from children being on the antidepressants? The psychiatrist said, I didn't, until one day a 16-year-old patient of mine showed up for his appointment with a 9mm handgun. And then I began to comb back through the reports on a bunch of those shootings. I can tell you, it focuses the mind to see a young patient sitting across from you. You've put him on an antidepressant, and now he's talking about a, quote, a new day, and he takes the gun out of his pocket and lays it on a table next to him by the Kleenex. You think to yourself, I may have created a killer, and his first victim could be me. People want to outlaw all guns. I'd start with the drugs. How about the diagnosis of depression itself? I've come to realize that you can't do an interview with a patient and then come out with a shorthand assessment. It's wrong. It reduces all sorts of problems down to a label, and then you have your official gateway into the drugs. Your colleagues think you're overreacting. I think I'm underreacting. I think we have an epidemic on our hands. But it has nothing to do with mental disorders. It has to do with the chemicals we're facilitating. Question, this boy with the gun, were you able to talk him down? I spent 2 hours with him that day. I told him he was having a reaction to the drug. At first it made no sense to him. He was on a manic sort of ride. That really scared me, that I couldn't make him see what was happening to him. He was in the middle of an episode, and he couldn't stand outside it. Finally, he eased up a little. He began to cry in my office. It wasn't really crying. Tears just ran down his cheeks while he was talking. He didn't seem to notice them. He had almost stopped being human. He was a creature. He was on a mission of some kind. His view of the world had totally changed. In his mindset, destruction was the only course of action. And by the way, I've got these prepared to send over to Darren, to our webmaster, for the health and medical section at sweetliberty.org. So you'll be able to read these if you have internet access. And the question, then the questioner, he said, is in his mindset, destruction was the only course of action. And then the questioner asked, he calmed down a little. I was afraid to ask him for the gun. He just picked it up and put it back in his pocket. After he left, I called his mother. She went home from her job and met him. I asked her to call the police, but she wouldn't. Later, she told me she sat and talked with him for a long time, and then he handed over the gun. It was a very tense situation. I had to remove the bottle of pills from the medicine cabinet. Then, I had to follow up. I weaned him slowly from the drug. It took 2 months. He finally sort of returned to being the person he was. Even then, I wasn't sure he'd be okay. He was definitely addicted to the drug. Luckily, I didn't cut him off suddenly. He might have killed people during the withdrawal cycle. Did you continue to see this boy as a patient? I did a nutritional assessment with the help of a doctor who's very good with that. We found that the boy was having strange reactions to certain soft drinks that have speed-type boosters in them. Did you hear that? He doesn't say what soft drinks. We found the boy was having strange reactions to certain soft drinks that have speed-type boosters in them. We gradually weaned him off them. Then we discovered he was reacting to dyes and other chemicals in junk food. So we had to change his diet. That wasn't easy. Question, he was addicted in several ways to chemicals? That's right. There was peer pressure for him to keep eating junk. All his friends did. They called him weird for going off the food that they were eating every day. When Nicole was young, this reminds me, when Nicole was little, I read Adele Davis's book, Let's Eat Right to Keep Fit, when Nicole was just a baby. So she really got a wonderful start in life. And I didn't have junk food in the house. And I did a lot of shopping at the health food store where I could even get some organic vegetables and et cetera. I would go to open-air markets to get the fruits and vegetables. I drove an hour one way to get raw milk from a dairy farm outside of St. Louis for them. And I read every single label in the grocery store, thanks to Adele Davis. But anyway, I can remember when Nicole, I think she was about 10, maybe 10 or so, 10 or 11, and she had a couple of friends there after school. We had juices there, and there were all kinds of snacks, but they were healthy snacks. And I would get them certain things, like I would get them fig bars from the health food store that had whole grain, you know, the biscuit on them, and I made most of their desserts and stuff out of good natural things and honey and stuff like that, but it wasn't the kind of junk that she was used to getting at their homes. And I didn't forbid her. I didn't call parents and say, I do not want my daughter eating that junk, because I knew that she ate enough good healthy food that little bit she got, and I didn't want her to feel like an outsider. But anyway, this one afternoon after school, she had a couple of friends there, and they were, you know, in the kitchen, and she said to them, I'm really sorry that we don't have any junk food in the house, but Mom hasn't gone to the grocery store yet. And I just smiled. I thought, that's okay if she wants to say that. But she was kind of embarrassed because we didn't have, quote, junk food in the house. Anyway, the doctor talks about the peer pressure, that his friends called him weird because he wouldn't eat the food that they were eating every day. And the doctor said, finally, I discovered 5 years before I saw him, he'd been on Ritalin for a year. You know, for ADHD. You know, for ADHD. He'd been driven into depression by that. He basically felt at 11 that his life was over. All paths and interests were closed to him. Well, how is he now? He's much better, but he's not all the way back. Do you think there is permanent brain damage? I don't know. He's now living outside the U.S. with his father. I get reports once in a while. Well, how does he feel about his own experience? He wants it to be an example to other families. You didn't go into medicine to deal with this, did you? No. In school, my ideals were high, but I allowed myself to be led down the garden path. This is a psychiatrist. That according to the beginning here, that he is either going to get out of practice or begin practicing alternative medicine. He says, I allowed myself to be led down the garden path. I fell for the sales pitch. I'm telling you, this is not a good situation. We're a society on the brink. Something has to be done. Well, how do you feel about Bush's mental health screening program for all children? All in all, it may turn out to be the worst thing he's done as president. It's just a tip of his hat to his pharmaceutical supporters. But the consequences, if this plan gets rolling, will be devastating. Remember the new Freedom Commission that Bush set up, folks? I know that the state of Illinois has passed it. I haven't heard of any other state passing it yet, but it would be a good idea for you, for all of us, to check in our own states. Check with your state legislator's office. Ask them to do a search for you. Go into the computer. In fact, you can get right into your state's website from sweetliberty.org. When you go in on the main page, it's over to the left, just a little ways down, and you'll see a state flag. And if you hit that flag, it'll take you into a page where every state is listed in there. And you can just click and it'll take you right into your state's website. That's thanks to Darren Weeks, our wonderful webmaster. And I do want to remind you that he's on, Monday night. He's on Mondays and Fridays after this broadcast on the internet. Be sure and make a note of that. Then the next question to the psychiatrist, is there some underlying principle at work here? Some paradigm that everyone is accepting that is putting us into a bad situation? Answer. You know the answer to that. It's the combination of easy diagnosis plus the drug fix. The pill craze for everything. Take a drug and everything will work out. I see it as the classic street drug promotion. Feel good. Take this drug and you'll feel different and better. Combine that with the basic immaturity of most people and you have the interlock. Why work out your problems and strive to have the life you want when you can arrive at the best destination with the pill? I take this a step further too. This is still the psychiatrist speaking. He says if you stacked up all the tranquilizers and antidepressants for adults next to, say, marijuana as a way of dealing with stress, I'd say that a very modest amount of a mild marijuana would be more successful than all those other drugs at the levels they're normally prescribed. If I were forced to recommend one or the other, I'd go with the marijuana. And I'd say the drug companies know this, which is one reason why in the U.S. the enforcement of marijuana has been stepping up. But again, you're always dealing with an individual. Each person is different. I've seen people who react very badly to pot. It affects them like a psychedelic. I would say that if somebody got affected like a psychedelic with pot, it was laced with something. Wouldn't you, folks? Farmers used to smoke it in the evening on their porch when hemp was grown. And then, of course, they came out with Reefer Madness. The reason that happened was that DuPont had just come up with their miracle new material, rayon or nylon. And at that time, somebody had also come up with a machine like the thresher that, because growing hemp, although it was a wonderful cash crop, and so many wonderful uses for it, was very labor-intensive. And suddenly a machine appears that is going to make it less, almost totally labor-free. And then DuPont started to lobby the U.S. Congress. And they couldn't pass a law against it without a constitutional amendment. So they placed a huge tax on it so the farmers couldn't grow it. We'll be back right after this. And please get your pen in hand. And remember, this broadcast is brought to you by you.
Going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month. And you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dog.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
In case you didn't get that number where you can call in if you don't have internet access and you want to get copies of the Sweet Liberty broadcast on CD, the phone number is 559-781-3773. 559-781-3773, $25, and you get the broadcast for an entire month on disc. So let's get back to this, folks. So he was talking about marijuana, and then I started talking about it. I've got a video here. I've been thinking about calling this guy to see if he'd come on and talk to us about it. It's just another lie that we've... I went to a drug thing at school when Jody was in junior high, I guess. And it's like that reefer madness thing. And oh my God, I thought they were going to die if they smoked pot. And I'm not saying that young people should use it because... it possibly and probably does lead to heavier drugs, but the point is, once again, we have been lied to mightily. So then the question to this psychiatrist, he asked, you're saying that the science behind the antidepressants is false? Absolutely. Judging by the effects of the drugs, it has to be. It may sound good and proper, all the right words are used, but I don't care about that anymore. I go by results. My eyes have been opened. Then why are the drug companies pushing these things? I'm not an expert to speak to about that. Certainly there is the profit motive, but I think there's also the myth of progress. What do you mean? That myth states that technology must keep making advances. It's the legend of forward motion. If technology is to be seen as good, it has to keep turning out better advances. Otherwise, something's wrong. And there can't be anything wrong. It's like a hectic race then. Yes, If you stop, you might fall down. Secrets might be exposed. Shortcomings might show up. So you have to keep pushing. You have to keep saying you're doing better and better. I'm sure you can see where this gets you. You make new mistakes to cover up old mistakes. You become careless. You lie. You hire promotion people to tout your work. You keep the whole thing rolling forward no matter what. That's where we are. And you were carried on that wave? Yes, for many years, but now I've stopped. Is it uncomfortable? Not so much anymore, but at first I was very upset and angry. I was blaming everyone but myself. I felt like I was in chains, that my whole education and career were at stake. And I was my career. Did you hear that, folks? I was my career. What are you going to be when you grow up? It isn't okay, I guess, is it, to just be ourselves? What are you going to be when you grow up? Oh, I'm a this, I'm a that, rather than the work that they do, the type of work that they're related to. They become that. And that's exactly what he said. I was my career. What else did I have? Getting off the boat was quite difficult. I had every advantage this society has to offer. I was, and the questioner said, the expert. He said, yes. That's a powerful feeling. People come to you with questions and you have the answers. If you don't, then you're thrown down in the pit with everyone else. Part of being a doctor is being above the pit, out of the problem. You're the solution. You don't want to fall. And the only thing that keeps you from falling is what you've learned, your knowledge. And when you see that that's based on lies, you don't know what to do. It's like being a priest and realizing that everyone gets to the far shore by his own means. You don't want to let go of the doctrine that put you on the pulpit. The doctrine, the dogma, folks. So what would a new paradigm look like? For mental health, we have to get rid of the old classifications and disorders. We have to let all of that sink into oblivion. That was wrong. That was largely fantasy. It is all fantasy, folks. Disorders, according to the book on psychiatry that I have, they actually sit around a round table, this group of psychiatrists, and they decide on disorders. And this is, as written in the book, it is the truth. But I can't guarantee. You know, we have to be careful when we say this is the truth, unless we absolutely know. But according to this book, they sit in a circle. There are, I think, 300 and some disorders. One being over coffee consumption disorder. One being inability to express in writing disorder. Jody and I were talking on the phone this weekend, and we got to laughing at each other. I didn't know she was like me, because if I go into, let's say, a restaurant, I park at a parking lot, go into a restaurant, go out another door, I am totally lost. I'm like I'm in another world. I actually asked somebody one time, can you tell me where I am? Because I was so sure my car should be right over there, and they laughed and said, you came out the wrong door. And Jody had said that to me. She says, Mom, turn me around, and I'm lost. And we got to talking about our experiences and decided it was a disorder. And so we called it directional dyslexia disorder. And if it goes on for too long, it becomes directional dyslexia dysfunctional order. That would be real dangerous. But that's how they come up with them, folks, the disorders, DDD, ADHD, ADD. I've been told I'm ADHD, by the way. If that's such a thing. Anyway, let's get back to this. So what would a new paradigm look like? It would look like getting rid of all the old classifications and disorders. We have to let all that sink into oblivion. That was wrong. It was largely fantasy. And the questioner said it was a story. Yes, we told it, and now we have to stop telling it, because we've ended up intervening in people's lives in a very pernicious way. part of the story necessitated that kind of intervention. Yes, it did, and not to take myself off the hook, but people want that kind of story, as you say. They want that expert story. They want someone else to come in and tell them what to do and what to think and what drug to take. Why do you think that is? Because people have taken the easy path. They've opted for what I would call a flat version of reality. If they started adding dimensions on their own, then they would be forced to tell their own story. In the terms you're using, yes, that's what would happen. They'd be forced to tell their own story. And how would society look then? It would look much different. Much more risky, perhaps, but much more alive. Psychology and psychiatry don't allow for that kind of outcome. All mental disorders are constructs. They're named by committees, as I'm sure you know. They're a form of centralized pattern. In this context, the word shrink is very appropriate. That's what we've been doing, shrinking down the perception of what reality and the mind are all about. This guy is pretty intense, isn't he, folks, a psychiatrist? The word shrink in this context is very appropriate because that's what we've been doing, shrinking down the perception of what reality and the mind are all about. Well, can you imagine what would happen if the lid were taken off? He says, I work with that idea every day now. And how does it look? It looks more and more appealing. And here's a short piece. That's the end of that article, folks. I just got that today, but that's what prompted me to do this tonight. This is another piece that I just pasted to the bottom of it. America the Beautiful, it's titled. Under the smiling, grandfatherly image of Ronald Reagan, hundreds of thousands of patients in mental hospitals were thrown out into the streets, and the hospitals closed down. A question of cost savings, it was explained. I guess they did that in the UK too, and heaven only knows other so-called developed nations where they've done it, folks. Open up the mental homes and let them out. The vast majority swiftly became homeless, cluttering up the doorways of stores to keep warm, scrabbling, it says here, through dumpsters to find something to eat. They were eventually thrown into jail, and there these unfortunate creatures remain, safely out of the public eye. Listen to this. They're given psychotic drugs to keep them in limbo, and if they stop taking them, they're seized by a fearsome-looking SWAT team and placed into solitary confinement cells and forcibly administered. Almost none ever get out of prison, because if they did, where would they go? A civilization is often rated by how it treats those unable to properly care for themselves. On a scale of 10, I'd put America somewhere around a 2. One might even call it, as it is, a national disgrace. And that's the end of that article. I have another one here. You know what I might do? Because I can never get through something in a short period of time, can I? I have to stop and tell my little stories. And here's a short one. This is the alleged missing Prozac papers. Found. Report suggests that Eli Lilly knew of the risk. This is the Tribune, Associated Press, and this was published January 1st, 2005, folks. Missing Prozac papers. This is London. A British medical publication said Friday that it had given U.S. regulators confidential drug company documents suggesting a link between the antidepressant Prozac and a heightened risk of suicide attempts and violence. Let me do that again. A British medical publication said Friday that it had given U.S. regulators confidential drug company documents suggesting a link between the antidepressant Prozac and a heightened risk of suicide attempts and violence. The British Medical Journal reported in its latest issue that documents it received from an anonymous source indicated that Prozac's manufacturer, Eli Lilly and Company, was aware in the 1980s that the drug could have potentially troubling side effects. Potentially troubling? 187 side effects, folks, from Prozac, including suicidal and homicidal. The Indianapolis-based company's stock dipped 75 cents a share to $56.75 on light afternoon trading Friday on the New York Stock Exchange. This was in January. The journal said the documents, reportedly missing for a decade, had formed part of a 1994 lawsuit against Eli Lilly on behalf of victims of a workplace shooting in Louisville. Joseph Westbecker, the gunman who killed eight people and himself in 1989, had been prescribed Prozac a month before the shootings. Eli Lilly won the case, but later disclosed that it had reached a secret settlement with the plaintiffs during the trial. The journal said that one of the records, dated November 1988, reported that fluoxetine, the generic name for Prozac, had caused behavioral disturbances, that's in quote, in clinical trials. I may have read this to you a long time ago when I got it, but you're hearing it again. The journal said it had turned the documents over to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which had agreed to review them. The journal said the office representative, Maurice Hinchy, also was examining the documents to determine whether Eli Lilly had withheld data from the public and the FDA. And this is a quote. Hinchy said that this is an alarming study that should have been shared with the public and the FDA from the get-go, not 16 years later. Just a minute, I lost my place. Lilly representatives said it had always been the company's objective to Eli Lilly representatives said it had always been the company's objective to disclose data about the safety and efficacy of Prozac. The company said Friday in a statement, quote, "To our knowledge, there has never been any allegation of missing documents, to our knowledge, from the Westbecker trial or any other trial involving Lilly." This is continuing the company's statement. Lilly has made several requests to the British Medical Journal to obtain copies of the supposed missing documents. We still await these documents. We are surprised and concerned that a leading medical journal would not find it important to share these documents with us so that we could respond to the public in a meaningful way. That's end quoting Lilly's company statements. Lilly said it has consistently provided regulatory agencies results from clinical trials and safety monitoring. Based on this, Lilly believes that there's no new scientific information to review on this topic. The company's statement said, in an earlier statement issued to the British Journal, Lilly said that Prozac, quote, has helped to significantly improve millions of lives. It is one of the most studied drugs in the history of medicine, has been prescribed for more than 50 million people worldwide. The safety and efficacy of Prozac is well studied, well documented, and well established, the statement said. In October, the FDA ordered that all antidepressants carry warnings that they, quote, increase the risk of suicidal thinking and behavior in children. Well, that's partway there, isn't it, folks? Increase the risk of suicidal/homicidal behavior. And this is a quote from Love Without End. It must be a book by Glenda Green. I don't know. I've been getting this at the end of several emails from different people. The practice of discernment is part of higher consciousness. That is so. The practice of discernment is part of higher consciousness. Discernment is not just a step up from judgment. In life's curriculum, it is the opposite of judgment. Through judgment, a man reveals what he needs to confront and learn. Through discernment, one reveals what he has mastered. If you'd like to call in, you may. The call-in number, and you should write it down, 570-537-3025. 570-537-3025. I've got a thing here on aspartame, folks. Oh, wait a minute. What's this? Yeah, aspartame. All right. You can call if you want. If not, you can listen to this and we'll try to get through it. This was a foreword. Even if you never read forewords, you must read this. If you consume aspartame in any way, shape, or form, diet, drinks, NutraSweet, equals spoonful, or you know anyone who does, then you need this information. It could save your life. This is written by Jean Peters. Oh, excuse me. Article by Nancy Markle. And it's titled FDA Issuing for Collusion with Monsanto. She says, I've spent several days lecturing at the World Environmental Conference on aspartame, marketed as NutraSweet, Equal, and Spoonful. In the keynote address by the EPA, they announced that there was an epidemic of multiple sclerosis and systemic lupus. Listen to this now. In the keynote address by the EPA, they announced that there was an epidemic of multiple sclerosis and systemic lupus, and they did not understand what toxin was causing this to be rampant across the U.S. I explained that I was there to lecture on exactly that subject. When the temperature of aspartame exceeds 86 degrees Fahrenheit, the wood alcohol in aspartame converts to formaldehyde and then to formic acid, which in turn causes metabolic acidosis. In parentheses, formic acid is the poison found in the sting of fire ants. The methanol toxicity mimics multiple sclerosis. Thus, people were being diagnosed with having multiple sclerosis in error. Sorry about that. I heard a noise and it feels like everything cleared up. The multiple sclerosis is not a death sentence where methanol toxicity is. In the case of systemic lupus, we are finding it has become almost as rampant as multiple sclerosis, especially with Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi drinkers. Also, with methanol toxicity, the victims usually drink three to four 12-ounce cans of them per day, some even more. In the case of systemic lupus, which is triggered by aspartame, the victim usually does not know that the aspartame is the culprit. The victim continues its use, aggravating the lupus to such a degree that sometimes it becomes life-threatening. When we get people off the aspartame, those with systemic lupus usually become symptomatic. Unfortunately, we cannot reverse this disease. On the other hand, in the case of those diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, when in reality the disease is methanol toxicity, most of the symptoms disappear. We've seen cases where their vision has returned and even their hearing has returned. This also applies to cases of tinnitus. During a lecture, I said, if you're using aspartame, NutraSweet, Equal Spoonful, etc., and you suffer from fibromyalgia symptoms, spasms, shooting pains, numbness in your legs, cramps, vertigo, dizziness, headaches, tinnitus, joint pain, depression, anxiety attacks, slurred speech, blurred vision, or memory loss, you probably have aspartame disease. People were jumping up during the lecture saying, I've caught this. Is it reversible? It is rampant. Some of the speakers at my lecture even were suffering from these symptoms. In one lecture attended by the ambassador of Uganda, he told us that their sugar industry is adding aspartame. He continued by saying that one of the industry's leaders' son could no longer walk, due in part by product usage. We have a very serious problem. Even a stranger came up to Dr. Esposito, one of my speakers, and myself, and said, could you tell me why so many people seem to be coming down with MS, multiple sclerosis? During a visit to a hospice, a nurse said that six of her friends who were heavy Diet Coke addicts had all been diagnosed with MS. This is beyond coincidence. Here's the problem. There were congressional hearings when aspartame was included in 100 different products. Since this initial hearing, there have been two subsequent hearings, but to no avail. Nothing has been done. The drug and chemical lobbies have very deep pockets, and now there are over 5,000 products containing this chemical, and the patent has expired. At the time of this first hearing, people were going blind. The methanol in the aspartame converts to formaldehyde in the retina of the eye. Formaldehyde is grouped in the same class of drugs as cyanide and arsenic, deadly poisons. Unfortunately, it just takes longer to quietly kill, but it is killing people and causing all kinds of neurological problems. Aspartame changes the brain's chemistry. It's the reason for severe seizures. This drug changes the dopamine level in the brain. Imagine what this drug does to patients suffering from Parkinson's disease. The disease also causes birth defects. There is absolutely no reason to take this product. It is not a diet product. The Congressional Record said, quote, it makes you crave carbohydrates and will make you fat, end quote. Dr. Roberts stated that when he got patients off aspartame, their average weight loss was 19 pounds per person. The formaldehyde stores in the fat cells, particularly in the hips and thighs. Aspartame is especially deadly for diabetics. And isn't that what diabetics do? They do the artificial sweeteners, folks. Aspartame is especially deadly for diabetics. All physicians know what wood alcohol will do to a diabetic. We find that physicians believe that they have patients with retinopathy, when in fact, it's caused by the aspartame. And boy, I'm really sorry we're out of time right now, folks. Maybe what we'll do is pick this up another time, because I have also other information in the same line that I want to share with you. And Gary Barnes is coming on with us tomorrow night. So we'll see you back then, and I hope that you will bring your friends. Bring all your friends, and we will see you then. Thanks for being here, folks, and God bless you. And good night. Nicholas is wonderful with that timing now. We'll see you tomorrow, folks.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936.